ESPN 980.
You're listening to The John Thompson Show with Doc Walker
on ESPN 980 and ESPN980.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as we come to you live from the 27th Army 10 Miler here at the D.C. Armory. Doc Walker's my sidekick, and joining us right now, as promised, is Chris Sheridan, SheridanHoops.com. Chris, talk to us a little bit about this NBA lockup. Is it is or is it ain't going to be a lockout? What's going on about
it? Well, Coach, put it this way. David Stern moved more in 5 minutes financially the other day, Tuesday. Make it 1 minute. He moved more in 1 minute than he had all summer. He went from offering the players 47% of the money to 50% of the money. And right now the players are asking for a deal that starts at 52.6%. So one side's at 50, the other's at 52.6. You know, you tell me, is that too wide of a bridge to be gap? I don't think so. I think there's an obvious middle point in there. And where things are at is Commissioner Stern said this thing needs to be done by Monday. And with the way these sides operate with each other, they know each other quite well. They know each side doesn't put its best offer forth until the very, very last minute. So there have been a couple of dry days here without lockout talks, but I fully expect this thing to get settled in the early part of next week. The sides are just too close right now.
Okay, so that would mean that we would have if that happens, that would mean that we would have a complete NBA season, right?
No, absolutely. You wouldn't have a complete preseason, not by any means, because once they reach a handshake agreement, they still have to put the document on paper and both sides have to sign it. It has to be ratified. So there's a process that has to be gone through. And what that would do is it would push the start of training camps back to somewhere around October 21st in that area. And the season scheduled to start, there's three games on November 1st. So you'd only have a 10- or 11-day training camp. But you tell me, Coach, is that enough time to get ready to play one game or 82 games?
No, I think it's definitely enough time. You know, only people it hurt. And Doc and I talked about that, Doc, in the NFL, the rookies. Mm-hmm. You know, the veterans do not want to play, do not want to practice preseason anyway, and particularly when you've got a 90-game season almost. You know, but and I think a lot of the veterans, as you know, Chris, play themselves into shape in the NBA just based on how many games that they have to play. So I don't think that'll hurt anything other than the rookies and people's anticipation and probably some of the networks that want to do some preseason stuff, you know, or people like ourselves that want to have something to talk about. No, I don't think it'll hurt performances at all.
Yeah, but when we do have something to talk about, because we'll have, you know, whatever it is, two dry weeks when they're putting the thing on paper, it'll still be time where everybody will kind of get an idea of what the agreement looks like and if there's an amnesty provision in there, how much cap space, you know, their favorite team has, because they're talking about having an amnesty provision in there that's going to free up an awful lot of cap space. And under this provision, every team can take one player off their team, cut him, they still have to pay him, but they cut him, and it doesn't count against the cap, and it doesn't count against the luxury tax. So take the Wizards, for instance. You know, you're talking about getting out from under Rashard Lewis's contract, not in the financial way, but in a cap flexibility way. The Washington Wizards can be rebuilt a hell of a lot quicker without Rashard Lewis's money dragging them down. Same for the Gilbert Arenas contract in Orlando, the Brandon Roy contract in Portland. There's a lot of money out there that represents what they call dead money or underperforming money. And if that amnesty provision is indeed in this lockout, the agreement that ends the lockout, people will have a lot to talk about while the deal's getting signed. And then you're going to have a bad 10, 11-day scramble to sign free agents, do what you will with your cap room, maybe play one exhibition game, and then get at it. So it'll be intense, but the NFL had a similar honeymoon with their fans. Once they settled, everybody wanted to know, okay, who's going to go where? What trades are going to be made? You know, are the draft picks going to sign quick? Because usually the draft picks in the NFL take forever to sign anyway. And it generated a lot of interest in the NFL and a lot of talk about the NFL before a single game was played. Now, the NBA would have a shorter window with that, but I think it would be a lot more intense because with only 10, 11 days from the start of camps to the start of the season, there's going to be a lot of movement going around and a lot of anticipation coming up, especially off the season that the NBA is just coming off of.
Chris, what happens with Sacramento and New Orleans? I mean, they can't get people to come to games, and I'm wondering, I thought part of the owner's strategy would be to contract a couple of teams.
Well, the New Orleans makes more sense to contract than Sacramento, but that's also going to take 15 jobs away from the union. And Commissioner Stern has come out recently and said he's got more than one bidder that wants to take a look at the Hornets' books and decide whether to buy them and keep them in New Orleans. And Commissioner Stern really wants to make the NBA work in that town. I think you saw it when the All-Star game was down there in a few years back, three, 4 years ago, and all the focus was on the NBA players helping to rebuild stuff, you know, when the city was still in the first couple of years after Katrina. There are no Fortune 500 companies down there in Louisiana, and there's not a lot of money to maybe support an NBA franchise long-term, but Commissioner Stern has said that there's buyers that want to keep it there, and so if you have a situation like that, you don't want to take away the value by contracting that team. And as for the Kings, they've got 1 year for Mayor Kevin Martin to put together and break ground on an arena plan that's going to allow them to get out of the Arco Arena, which is ready to fall apart, and play in a state-of-the-art arena, which is what you need to generate the revenue streams to compete in the NBA this year. And Sacramento is the biggest city in America. It doesn't have a decent venue that you could use for even like rock concerts or stuff like that. Because if you've been out to Arco, and I'm sure you have, Coach, that place was falling apart when they built it. And it's falling apart even more now. It's still probably the most charming venue in the NBA because it's small and all the small arenas have gone down. But it has a short shelf life, and they do have a one-year reprieve from the league. And if that arena deal can't get through the proper legislative channels, then there's a deal for them to move the team to Anaheim for the 2012-13 season.
Chris, let me ask you about this whole thing in China, and I understand you did a piece and have some concerns about it. What is the interest level of NBA in China? You hear so many people talking about it, and I just read where Nike is building a campus in China, you know, a whole campus very similar to what they have out in Oregon. Now, what is the interest level of NBA basketball in China?
Well, it depends who you talk to. If you talk to the NBA, they'll tell you that the Chinese people are watching all sorts of NBA games. It doesn't matter if Yao Ming or Yi Jianlan is playing. The Chinese have watched so much basketball over the past 7-8 years they'll watch a Miami-Boston game or a Dallas-Oklahoma City game because they're so accustomed to the rest of the players in the league. Some of the Chinese will tell you, and I have a columnist out of Beijing who wrote about this the other day, that the Chinese don't want to watch basketball if one of their own players isn't in it. That's the majority of the Chinese basketball fans. And, I think the truth probably lies somewhere in between, but when you're talking about a country with 1.3 billion people, they have more people who play basketball in China at some level, recreationally to professionally, than we have in the United States total. They have more people playing basketball in China than we have people in the United States. So think about that number and think about the growth potential with that, not just from a fan standpoint, but from a talent standpoint. And the Chinese national team has come a long way probably over the last 12 years. I covered the Athens Olympics when they made it for the first time to the knockout round, to the quarterfinals. They had to beat Yugoslavia to do so, and Yugoslavia was the defending world champion at the time. And they just won the Asia Championship behind Yi Jianlan, and he had a great tournament. He got the MVP, and they're going to be competing again in London. So there's a lot of interest in basketball in China. Is the NBA going to be able to sustain a market of people watching there when there's no Chinese players in the NBA right now because Yi Jianlan doesn't have a team? You know, I think with the amount of people that there are in that country, they'll grow accustomed to not watching a Chinese player. The game is played at such a high level in the NBA that it doesn't matter what country you're from. If you're a fan of basketball, you have to enjoy NBA basketball.
Chris, tell us about your website and how we, our listeners, can follow you on Twitter.
Well, you know, those of you who have read me over the years, I spent 10 years as the lead NBA writer for the Associated Press, and then I was at ESPN for the last 6 years, and then my contract ended, and I decided, rather than wait for another job with another big media company, I started calling some of my friends in the business who weren't working for anyone and said, what about this, doing this on our own? Starting a website that's a lot more a lot less cluttered than some of the big NBA websites, and something that's driven by, you know, real quality content, good writing, good commentary. There's video on there, there's audio on there, and there's not a lot of garbage on there. Plus, I have a correspondent in Barcelona who's covering EuroLeague. That's one day a week, and I have a guy who writes on Saturdays who covers preps and recruiting at colleges. And I have the guy that I mentioned before, Guan Wajia in Beijing, who's going to write about the American players who are playing in China. So I've got a website that's going to not only cover the NBA, but cover global basketball and reach a global audience. And I do have Mark Heisler on my staff. He spent only 35 years at the Los Angeles Times and got inducted into the media wing of the Naismith Hall of Fame. So he's got some pretty good credentials. And Jan Hubbard just joined up as well. He's worked for Newsday and the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and the Dallas Morning News, and he worked in the NBA communications department for 8 years. So he's been on both sides of the fence. And
yeah, that's good. Well, Chris, look here, buddy. I hate to cut you off, but we got to get out of here. We got to make some money here ourselves.
Coach Thompson, well, SheridanHoops.com. Thanks for letting me plug it, and thanks for having me on the show this afternoon.
Okay, buddy. We certainly do appreciate it.